Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, Side B, Episode 36, Side B. It's still called Hide and Seek, but in Side B, we will be recapping Flash and Arrow, Feelings Over Facts / Sacrifice, the usual housekeeping. I'm May, and I'm still here with Tatiana and Jessica. And our contact information is still on Twitter at DCTVGumption. You can email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or now you can contact us on Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And if you'd still like to contact us individually, we are Valerie M. Perez for Tatiana, Falling in Love in a Flash for Jessica, and Her Own Hero Writer for myself. Before we get into the recaps for Side B, we do have some feedback from a couple of people, quite a few people. Our first one, I have Aaron's pulled up first, so I'm gonna go with him. He sent us an email about his Flash feels, and he wanted to say that he just loves Iris West Allen. She has been the best part of season 4, even though season 4 has been very messy, he says, and he thinks that she's had a great arc, and he really loved her scenes with Harry. And one of his nitpicks is that while he liked Cisco taking responsibility for the bus metas, he thinks it was a little too late and that it lessened the impact because it came so late in the season. As far as crossover news, he thinks it'll be cool to introduce Batwoman in Gotham, but he hopes that the focus is on all 4 shows. And I won't mention his other comment.
Aaron. I will. Because he said that if Oliver tries to, like, order Batwoman around, he hopes that she beats his ass.
Yes. Which will totally happen because she is Batwoman.
Yeah. And if they don't do that, then I'm like, what are you doing?
Exactly. I hope she has many words and many fight scenes.
Many words.
Tanika also sent us an email. Some of her likes included that she loved the aesthetics of Flash Time. She thought it was very beautiful, and Iris and Harry's scenes made her laugh. She will admit that the retcon number 3 for Caitlin doesn't really make sense at the moment, but she thinks that this angle could prove good for a potential storyline next season, and that it could have real depth when we learn about her third origin story.
Poor Caitlin.
And some of her dislikes included that she really wishes Barry was the one figuring out his powers and discovering how to manipulate Flash Time, and she thinks it makes her resent Cisco and Caitlin a little bit because Barry has not really been smart in 4B, and so she feels that they dumb him down, basically, to make Star Labs relevant.
That sounds accurate.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
That's famous villain origin story. Let Barry be smart, 2K18.
Exactly. And a nitpick of hers is that Iris Samaloth was the first place she lived in with Barry. She thinks that that's false. Aww. That was Joe's place. But Tanika, it was their first place as a couple.
Exactly. Yes. Like, of course she felt, you know, loved and safe in her dad's house, but that wasn't her house.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And she also wishes there was a scene to bridge the gap between Iris not necessarily wanting to find Marlies versus her telling her she believes in her when confronting her. Yeah, so those are Tanika's feedback, and we'll post the rest of this to our Tumblr. And we have some feedback from our Arrow correspondent, Tasha.
Yay, Tasha!
Who had many feels about the season finale of Arrow. She's come to the conclusion that once Kreisberg was fired, Guggenheim realized he wasn't long for the Arrowverse and decided to burn his show down on his way out. Ouch.
Damn.
She thinks that how else does one explain the fact that the season started off strong and then devolved into a game of how many characters can I assassinate?
That's true.
Yeah. So, like, all the stuff about Diggle finding his brother apparently didn't happen. And Curtis randomly becomes bitter towards Felicity. And even at, she mentions, like, his bitterness at their happy ending for her and Oliver. And then Oliver started the season communicating, but then he stopped communicating. And yep. that's when all the problems started. So that's an interesting way to look at it, definitely.
I mean, something happened. Like, we've been discussing that it feels like right. Guggenheim stopped giving a fuck.
Right.
I feel like, you know, we were trying to figure out what went wrong or what happened or when the change was. And since we're fake Arrow fans, we have not been paying attention closely as we may have done, like, for example, like The Flash or even Supergirl. Supergirl is pretty night and day in a change in their dynamic when he left. Mm-hmm. I guess if we went back and tried to like pinpoint where we thought the shift in the writing was, but it just
there was a big shift after the crossover, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The crossover was written one way for Arrow, like obviously letting Arrow take over the crossover. And then right after that, it was like, we're falling apart at halftime.
Or not, yeah.
Dance, dance.
Like, Felicity's company that never was a thing anymore after, and like, the whole, you know, whether that's connected to Emily Bett-Ricard, she's definitely, you know, spoken her mind about how she felt about Mark Guggenheim and his reactions to,
That'd be fucked up.
Yeah.
And she mentions that, too. So her theory continues about Caden James, how he was supposed to be Felicity's villain and her company's storyline was supposed to be important, but that disappeared not long after Emily called out his stupid reverse sexism comment. So that kind of flew out the window. And as we saw, it never recovered, even when Felicity was quote-unquote fired from the Arrow Cave. But she is happy that Beth is taking over. And so hopefully that'll breathe some fresh air into Arrow.
Good.
And it'll, so too. It'll give us some, like, direction on where exactly the writing team wants to go with both Arrow and Elicity as a ship. Mm-hmm. Because, like, we were talking amongst ourselves, and it just kind of feels like, how are you, like, so obsessed with your ship and then also hate it at the same time? Sometimes. So maybe with, like, Beth, one person, a new face, we can finally figure out where the show wants to go.
Exactly. So she had lots of feedback for her Arrow episode. However, we will read some of that in the Arrow section. And yes, and then the rest you can find on our Tumblr. Thank you for all the lovely feedback. We absolutely appreciate it. And again, all of this will be posted on Tumblr so we can chat and discuss and see what everybody else thinks. And now we can move into our side B recaps with our lovely Tatiana, who will first recap The Flash. And before we go into our recaps, Jessica will talk to you about June is for Candace. Take it away, Jessica.
Thanks. So I mentioned this on side A. So you listen to side A, then you already heard it. But I'll give a shorter version on side B. Since June is, Candace's birthday is coming up on June 24th, I was thinking about maybe doing something positive, spreading a lot of positivity in her tags for this month specifically, just because there's been like an increase, it seems like, in haters trying to get some attention. And so to drown that out, I wanted to do something hashtag June is for Candace. I'll be putting something up on my Tumblr pretty soon. I'm going to try and like volunteer Tatiana to make me a poster for you guys. To figure out what the themes of the week are. It's going to be like four themes in each week of June, just spreading positivity in her tag. Affirmations are for Candace, pets are for Candace, artists for Candace, I am for Candace on her birthday, and then appreciation is for Candace on the last week of June. So just basically kind of getting you in the mood to kind of fill her tags on Twitter, Instagram with a lot of love. So look forward to that. And now we can get into our side B recaps with The Flash and Arrow. Tatiana, take it away.
The Flash. Think Fast introduces a new version of DeVoe, the Diggle kind. He infiltrates Argus, berates their music choices, and then goes full meta-murderer on their asses while Handel's Messiah plays in the background. And it's amazing. Before the Argus techs are all tied up in DeVoe's hostage plan, though, one of them alerts Team Flash to the event by commenting on Iris's blog. So, thanks to an anonymous Central City citizen, Team Flash now knows they have 12 hours before Borman goes critical and sets off the final satellite that DeVoe needs to commence the Enlightenment. However, Barry can't save the hostages from electrocuting plates that will kill him and destroy the satellite alone. And apparently there were no other speedsters available. So, Sisko comes up with a brilliant plan. Barry will bring Sisko and Caitlin into Flash Time so they can all do it together. Except that this plan requires training, extensive training for some reason, and that does not go so well. Sisko has performance anxiety when it comes to his breechlings, and Caitlin's cold gun just shoots puffs of lukewarm air before knocking her into a wall so that she can remember things from her childhood. This means that Barry puts his foot down about endangering his BFFs until Sisko unleashes a string of truths on him. Because, see, Barry's not the only one feeling guilty, seeing as Sisko caused the bus metas in the first place, and everyone else deserves a chance to be a hero. So, the Flash Time plan resumes, and now, suddenly, training goes great off-screen. Too bad that the rescue operation doesn't stop the Enlightenment, because DeVoe just goes over to Star Labs and uses their satellite instead. Welcome to the reboot. Except, there is still hope to stop this. Because, in what is known as the best storyline of the night, Iris asks Harry for help in tracking down Marlies so that he can feel useful while his intelligence disappears. And he does end up being useful, because, despite he and Iris clashing over what they should do with Marlies once they find her, Harry helps Iris realize that she needs to join the team, even though Iris remembers trying to tame Savitar and getting Katana Scar. So now she wants Marlies to go directly to the pipeline prison and not pass go or collect $200. So with one hilarious visit to the West Allen loft and a few apartment four and shoe jokes later, Iris realizes where Marlies is hiding out, in the first home she shared with her husband, where she feels loved and safe, because that is where Iris would be. See? Parallels, and also West Allen is the OTP. So, Iris and Harry reach to London, where Iris and Marlies nearly come to blows. But then, Marlies realizes Harry is what all humans will eventually look like thanks to the Enlightenment, and Iris quotes Marlies' words about optimism back to her, convincing her to help them stop DeVoe. Girl power! And by the way, Cecile can now inhabit other people's minds rather than simply read them, which definitely doesn't sound like something they're going to use in the finale. And the memory that Caitlin recovered, while knocked out, is exactly the one she was repressing in her earlier visit to Dr. Finkel. It turns out that Killer Frost's residence in Caitlin's body predates the particle accelerator, so suck on that, Flashpoint. And that's what you missed on The Flash. Please share your positive feelings about this episode first.
My positive feelings. Well, first of all, it needs to be said that Iris and Harry worked really well as a duo, and it's the pair that we did not know that we needed. I usually don't like their dynamic together because Wells is typically like arrogant and condescending, but with his diminishing intelligence and recently learning how to get in touch with his feelings, like, he graduated from the Council of Harrison School of Emotional Intelligence, so now much more cute and funny dynamic. And even when he was, like, getting on her last nerves, like, to her credit, she was doing her best to be patient with him. And I like that she tasked him with, like, proofreading her stories as a way to make him feel useful, just because of how kind of sad and depressed he's been about losing his intelligence. And I was saying earlier in Side A with Supergirl, it kind of reminded me, like, the same parallels with Kara and John trying to get Mirren to help them in their situation and get him, like, make him feel useful and, you know, kind of heal his depression a little bit about losing his memory. So it's kind of like the same thing. It's just really nice to see that they are kind of a family and they care about each other. And he's, like, some of his quips, like how he gets so excited when he thought that he figured out something from, like, her blog. He's like, boom, mic drop. And she's like, you know, hold on to that mic. He's like, oh, that's imaginary. Back and forth is, like, really cute to me. And I like that he kept, even, like, when she did get a little bit stubborn about not wanting to see Marlies' point of view, I like that Harry kept being insistent and pushing her to consider Marlies' emotions because she was, like, I was letting her own personal feelings get in the way. And so I like that they had Harry, like, push her. Like, even though he has diminishing intelligence, he still is very self-confident about the fact that he's right. That's nice. I mean, like, the writers could have went another way with having her snap at him and out of frustration, him feeling defeated and, you know, being really negative about it. But at this time, like, his arrogance kind of worked in his favor, which is really good. Another moment that I like from them was when he was, like, banging on apartment floor, yelling, "What's Alan? What's Alan?" Like, kind of reminding me of, like, Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory and how he's, like, not my mouth.
Yes, Penny!
Penny! And then later, like, when she tells him that she knows where Marley is, and he's like, "Apartment floor!" There's just, like, a lot of, like, really cute moments like that. And I know he's, like, technically losing his mind, but, like, can we keep, like, this version of Harry? Because
yes, keep this version, but keep his memories.
Right, keep his memories, but keep this dynamic. Like, I like that he's more in touch with his feelings and emotional side, and he's not so, like, arrogant and condescending. Like, that's the part, like, the grunting and throwing things is what I don't like, so I really like this Harry, and it would be nice if we could keep him around for a little while longer.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Other journalist Iris News, like, she has 400,000 views on her website, like, already. You know, she's iconic.
Tell us your secret, Iris.
I know. Anonymous Central City citizen, like, hello, brand new newspaper company, here we come. I was really
excited
about that. I like how this episode was divided into Team Barry and Team Iris, in the sense that both of these leaders had a team, Barry with Caitlin and Cisco, trying to figure out how to rescue the hostages, and then Iris with Harry and the rest of Central City, you know, trying to figure out where Marlies is. Like, just
the winning team.
Yeah, the dream team. Justice and the truth. I actually hope they make that connection in the finale some kind of way, because I think that they've been building up those parallels. And so I really liked how they set it up in this episode. Iris and Marlies continue to be one of my favorite dynamics of the season. I love how she was able to convince Marlies with her own early research. And I just love seeing them together and how it's, like, on site. Every time they see each other, it's, like, on site. I'm going to be here with us. Cecile's, like, cute as shit, basically. Her, like, becoming, like, okay, it started, it kind of, not going to lie, it kind of freaked me out a little bit when she started, like, channeling the dude bra. Kind of mind, like, is this, like, iZombie now? Is she, like, you know, eating brains and taking over their personalities? And I had, like, the miniest of heart attacks when I thought that it was Melora behind the door.
Oh my god.
Really talked because of the whole This House of Bitchin' line. But it was, like, a big star release. It was just a pizza guy. I thought Cecile's Joe was hilarious. And some people I've seen said that she did better Caitlin than Caitlin.
Oh, well, that's not that bad.
I'll save my prediction for how I think that plays into the finale to stop DeVoe into the prediction section. Let's see. And then, like, his whole intro, the whole first 5 minutes with him orchestrating the chaos inside Argus was really well done. We finally got to see all of his powers on display at the same time, so I thought that was really great. And it was an appropriate amount of tension throughout the episode of can they save these people or not, and Barry, between him and Cisco, the intensity of that fight had me shook, just how intense it was, and since Cisco actually taking ownership of his part in the bus metas, and, like, he would not let Barry put him in, like, a protective bubble, like, no one puts Cisco in a corner. I thought it was really good for their relationship. Mm-hmm. And then just lastly, there's just the right amount of Diggle in this episode, which is, like, one cameo, and then he's gone.
Oh.
Well, not to David, you know, Ramsey, but just, I feel like sometimes, like, when you have characters, for example, Felicity coming over to the Flash, and then she's in throughout the whole episode, or maybe she doesn't need to be in the whole episode, and that one cameo would be enough. And I feel like this is the kind of, you know, when you have the guest starring from another show, like, this was, like, the right amount of guest star. David Ramsey made a really good DeVoe.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. I think he was the best DeVoe since...
Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also love this episode way more than I thought I would. And I especially love that all the characters had something and they got to develop alongside the main plot, and that their developments actually fed into helping to stop DeVoe. And I love the fact that Cisco really stood up to Barry to take responsibility for the bus metas as well, because that was a big thing. Like, he was, you know, arguing back and forth with Iris in the first episode about the consequences and what it means, but that he wants Barry back. And I'm glad that that came back, even though it is in episode 22. But I really did think that the show would never address this at all, but I'm glad that they did. And I liked that Cisco understood where Barry was coming from, but also by shouldering the responsibility for the issues he helped to create, he was really saying that he wouldn't be cast aside while Barry put the full weight of the fight against DeVoe on his shoulders. And I think it really centered the Barisco friendship specifically, which I liked a lot. I also liked that Iris was ready to jump in to defend Barry as soon as Cisco raised his voice. And, you know, she's his protector, and she's shown to never like when someone is yelling at Barry and always wants to step in. And I also like that Harry held her back in a, like, let them have at it kind of way. And speaking of Iris and Harry, I loved their interactions this episode. Like just said, it's the dynamic we never knew we needed. And Harry losing his intelligence has really opened up room to explore his character in a completely different way. Like, it's a different version of Harry while still being Earth 2 Harry. And I like how the roles were kind of switched here. So, like, Iris was the one arguing that you couldn't change the minds of monsters. And Harry was all sunshine and rainbows and let's walk in her shoes. They both had good... What was that?
Literally walk in her shoes.
Yes. I think they both had good points. Like, Iris had been scarred by Savitar last year and this year by Marlies, literally and figuratively. So it was understandable why she wouldn't want to try and empathize after all she'd done to her. And I like that Harry was so adamant about trying to look at it from Marlies' perspective, but then apologized for not seeing it from Iris' perspective. And
yes,
I love their banter and Harry yelling in the hall. It was super cute, but I especially love the line where she's like, the teapot is still hot. He's like, you know what that means? Yes, let's have some tea. It was just like super random and like, you know, I know Tom ad-libs a lot, so that's just super funny to me. So, like Jessica mentioned, I think they managed to balance the pain of him losing his memories with comedy in a way that wasn't mean or cruel, and his new dynamic was really one of the highlights of the episode. I love Sharon Finkel also claiming she charges everyone on Team Flash by the quarter hour because they just keep disappearing during her sessions. I also love that Barry did come up with something on his own at first and was so excited about using Flash Time when he explained he could use it to stop DeVoe. The past two episodes specifically, we've gotten hints of, like, dorky Barry, like, you know, sciencey Barry getting excited about something. So I hope that the writers continue doing that more often. Diggle and his puking is a running joke, but I'm glad the team was prepared with trash cans this time. Glad the writers finally confirmed that Caitlin has repressed emotions and memories, because many have been saying this for a long time, and props to Jess for writing a whole article about it. So she and Killer Frost are essentially one and the same, but also not, and I'll get into that more later. Iris' speech to Marlies was fantastic, and I like that she figured out where she might be based on Harry's advice, but also the parallels of herself feeling loved and safe in a home with her husband were great. And I also love the moment Barry gave Iris the extrapolator and trusted her to go after Marlies, and how that was the complete opposite of Marlies no longer trusting Clifford, and also Barry putting his trust in Cisco and Caitlin to help. So Cecile is also, I love her, you know, she's adorable, and I request they keep her forever. And yes, her imitating the pizza guy, Caitlin and Joe, was really funny. And I also, I especially love that she was about to, like, why does Joe have a katana? I don't.
He stole it off the, he defeated the samurai.
Yes, Samurai. But, like, he so was about to take it to the hospital. Him. It's just funny to me. Like, they would let him let that into the hospital.
It's so joke, right? Yeah, Joe would. Plus, can't he just, like, take a gun like a cop?
Right. Like, he has, you know, he can carry it around as a cop anyway. I also love that Barry did get a win, however brief that was, in the end.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. What? It worked?
Right? I was like, whoo, that's amazing. And then it didn't work. Finally, I did love the opening sequence. DeVoe using everyone's powers paired with the music was really good and exciting. And Neil is just excellent. So that whole scene was just super pleasing to super. to my eyes.
Pleasing to my eyes. I mean, it was also pleasing to mine eye. I really thought that those like first 5 minutes of the episode were so damn good. Like first DeVoe as Diggle, and then how like the music triggered him to reveal himself. I feel like y'all have shitty music taste. Listen to Messiah or Hallelujah, whatever the fuck the Handel music piece is called. But yeah, and I love like every little bit there, because like the Argus woman that was like reading Iris' article, like that's the kind, and then she uses that to alert the team. Like that's the kind of methods that I want to see them employing to connect the city to Barry and the Flash via journalism, via Iris's work. Like that's what I love. And I love that we got to see him go through all of his meta powers while bitching about his wife. Like, because his emotions are still affecting him, even as he's saying that emotions are, you know, the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, my wife used to hold me back, and now I can just be a total show off. So I enjoyed that a lot. It was a good 5 minutes of TV. More good minutes of TV were everything about the Harry and Iris team up. Everything was spectacular. I love Harry being so happy to find the anonymous Central City citizen, and how that was lovely foreshadowing of Iris starting her own paper. Yeah! And like you guys said, I loved Iris finding things for Harry to do so he would feel useful, because that also showcases how she's empathetic. And she always wants to make people feel comfortable. And then he did actually end up being super useful against her expectations. So I love when writing is good. That was good writing. Yay!
Woohoo!
I also like, I like that in general we got to see her passion for journalism stick around. Like, it actually feels like a through line now, more so than it had in a long time. Like, in definitely more so than in season 3, and perhaps even, well, no, you know what, there was like 3 episodes in a row in season 2 where she was doing journalism, so since season 2. Anyway, I really liked Iris making her Marlies board. It was like parallel to Barry making his DeVoe board, and how she and Harry worked on it together, but also sort of hadn't, because like I feel like the Flash often avoids arguments and avoids like conflicting emotions. So it was nice that I think this episode delved into them both with Iris and Harry and with Cisco and Barry.
Yeah.
Without, like, it didn't back down from different perspectives, but it also didn't go too far and get super dramatic. So that was nice. I liked that Iris related the Marlies and DeVoe situation to Savitar, because it's nice to see her, you know, actually have leftover feelings from that and have that color her perspective in new situations. And so it was the turntables, right, with Harry being the one to rationalize Iris's emotional reaction when that's usually her role. Really enjoyed that. And of course, I could go on about everything. Like, literally everything that they did was hilarious. Apartment 4, like you guys already said, and the shoes, right? Literally putting himself in her shoes, and then her being like, stop tracking mud through my house. So everything about it was gold. We need more scenes for them, please, and thank you. Meanwhile, the parallels between Iris and Marlies never stop, never stopping, and I love their scenes together. It's really cool that Iris gets her own nemesis this season that goes along with Barry's. And I like how we got to see them sort of come together with Harry's help. Iris quoting Marlies about pessimism not being smarter than optimism was perfect and something that fandom should take to heart. For the love of God. So, I really liked the concept of Harry being the embodiment of the Enlightenment. Like, sort of just like, he is what's going to happen to everyone else, and actually seeing that, Marlies realizing that. I thought it was really poignant, and I feel like it was something that could have been vocalized earlier. Like, I guess we could just, like, imagine that that's the case, but knowing that concretely beforehand would have given the Enlightenment a more personal feeling, I think.
Right.
But anyway, I actually really liked the Caitlin and Sharon Finkel scene. Dr. Finkel makes everything better. and it's good that we finally get backstory for Caitlin and her life after, like, 4 fucking years. So even, you know, regardless of like however many reboots she's had as Killer Frost, to actually hear about her relationship with her father, you know, and how she felt about his ALS, etc. Like, that's something that we haven't really had a chance to explore for her. So that was good. Mm-hmm. And I wish that they had come up with her always being Killer Frost earlier, or just followed the comics when it came to her. But at least now we have something that has the potential to make sense in a future episode. So, yay! And the fact that they literally said DID for her, finally. Sharon Finkel actually said DID, and I was like, yes! Thank yep. you. She had DID. We knew this from the moment that we met Frankie. Why the fuck did you not say that before?
Right.
So, yeah, that was great. It's clear that the writers love Danielle Nicolette's comedic chops. So I enjoyed her and Joe getting the little subplot. It was, like, a little low stakes for penultimate episode, but I'm mostly just happy that Joe had fucking screen time, you know? And him, like, bringing her back with the Lamaze was adorable. That was really cute, especially because, like, they had seeded it earlier in the episode when he's like, oh, I'm really enjoying the Lamaze method that I'm reading about. And I was like, oh, okay. I also thought that Cisco's trouble with Flash Time was really funny. First with him, like, falling over while trying to create a breach, and then afterward when he's boasting about his breachling, who's going to blossom into maturity soon. It was really cute. Yep. And on the flip side, Carlos killed it with the emotions when Cisco was confronting Gary about his own guilt. So yeah, I thought it was a good episode for him. I love my son.
He had some good, like, ad libs. He was like, "Wah-cha!" with, like, yeah. his house music in Flash Time and everything. So it was really nice.
Yeah, I loved it. And then finally, I did get my moment of Killer Vibe, which I have been sorely
yes. missing.
I don't know if it's the last time I had Killer Vibe, but yay, it lived.
It was a moment, but it was a good moment.
It was a good moment. So, what did we have negative feels about?
I don't rant enough for all of us, but about Caitlin and the storyline they have her going through. But, like, based on the final scene of last week's episode, I knew the next step would be for her to go to Dr. Finkel's office. And I thought it started out good with that session, and then she had to cut out. But with everything else going on in general with this penultimate episode to the finale, it just seemed, like, out of place. Like, there was, like, not a lot of room for Caitlin's storyline in this episode. So I wish they kind of, like, condensed a lot of the stuff that they had her going through and re-going through in earlier episodes and just, like, put Finkel in, you know, like, 420 or something earlier. So, because we had already, like, figured out that it wasn't anything scientific that was in her mind, because, like, once you figure out that there's a gene there and there's no dark matter in your system, dark matter is not the source, then maybe she's trying to figure out something, like, maybe it's a mental block, and that should have came a lot earlier than it did. The writers had to, like, literally invent reasons for Jocelyn to come to Star Labs, for Jocelyn to, like, telepath Caitlin and tell her what Caitlin should, you know, have already figured out by now. And then it feels like there should have been, like, another scene with, like, Caitlin going back to Dr. Finkel after her vibe session with Cisco to be, like, you know, on the path to healing. And there's no space for that in the finale. So it feels like we've got something, but it's kind of incomplete.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's like, so why did we waste Sharon's time this episode? Like, I see that, like, why she charges him every quarter hour, because clearly, you know, and then speaking of this, like, repressed memory, this is, like, the third or fourth reboot of the Killer Frost origin story, and I liked that, you know, they had, the memory was fine or whatever, but I just feel like, why did it take us so long to get here, and why are you redoing it? You know, you gave us one explanation, and that didn't make any sense, and you gave us the Hulk explanation that kind of made sense, and now you're just giving it a different explanation that negates the other two. So it's like, well, what is the truth? Oprah.gif. You know, right? Like, I've always said that her beginning of her power stemmed from some kind of repressed trauma, so, like, thanks to writers for, like, validating that. But, like, really, this Batman? Like, how is she, like, a meta pre-particle accelerator explosion if this whole time they've been explaining her powers as a side effect of, like, dark matter? has dark matter. Season 4, she loses her powers via melting point, tested for dark matter. Dark matter no longer present. So, but then, like, you've got this kind of gene thing going on. So if her powers are connected to dark matter, and dark matter came from the particle accelerator explosion, but she was a meta even before the particle accelerator explosion, then, like, Killer Frost's existence just makes, like, no fucking sense. Especially if you're trying to say that she's two separate people in one body. It just doesn't make any sense.
That whole explanation actually just gave me a headache. I'm just like, damn, that, yeah, you're right. Yeah, exactly. All of that.
Exactly. I'm like, what, I lost the plot.
I think her dad is, like, hella suspicious now.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, crackhead Caitlin theories to follow. This is a nitpick more so than a dislike, really. But in the training session, all the dummies were wearing the exact cloning and were in the exact position of the real hostages. And I feel like the Flash team only had, like, thermal imaging, so they didn't know who it was. So I just thought it was, like, really weird that you would have them set up the exact same way that they're in the actual Argus facility.
Oh. Yeah. Wink-a-dink.
Yes. And then the other thing about the training scene and the episodes in general recently is how the writers pay Danielle to just stand on a mark and say, like, absolutely nothing at all. And because they don't write lines for her, Danielle feels like she has to, you know, appear engaged non-verbally in conversations that verbally exclude her, and the result is just, like, distracting more than anything. Like, between the writers and the director, like, someone, like, either the writers need to give her a line to engage her in the plot, in the conversation, or just the director needs to move the camera in and cut her out the frame. Because it's, like, constantly, she's, like, constantly photobombing scenes. It's like she's trying to, like, mind what she would say if she only had a voice. Like, if, like, the Wizard of Oz, like, I could do so much if I only had a voice. Like, doing in the background. Like, you want to see what I mean? Like, I time-marked it. It was, like, the 22-minute, 42-second mark when they first entered Flash Time for the first time. And, like, watch Danielle just, like, play charades in the background. If she's allowed to say anything. It's kind of, like, funny, but it's just, like, really distracting. And then, like, that's the only thing that she, I think when she starts the timer, she doesn't say anything else for the rest of that scene. But she's still, like, in the scene, they just don't, like, talk to her. It's just Barry and Cisco. So I guess, like, for one thing, you can definitely tell which relationships writers value. Because, like, in that first scene, when it is just focused on, like, Cisco's failure to, like, secure his, like, breachling or whatever, she says one line, and then she just stands silent and does nothing while Barry and Cisco banter back and forth. But in her scene, when it's her time to, like, fail, Cisco is allowed commentary and reactions to her. So it's, like, her closest relationship is Cisco, so the writers allow him to react to that. But in the writers' eyes, between Barry and Caitlin, Cisco's strongest relationship is still Barry, so that's where they focus on. And then Caitlin's kind of, like, left out to the side. And you see that again when they have their big fight. It's mainly a Barisco fight, and then Caitlin is off, like, wallpaper in the background. Yeah. There's not, like, a lot of balance there, but they still, like, she's, you can see her, but she just doesn't say anything. And then a small dislike, Amunet only giving them one fucking bullet. Like, it was my dislike from last week, but they only, like, Barry can only destroy one satellite with that one bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And out of all the metal they stole from her, it was just stupid that they only got one bullet, which meant only one satellite could be destroyed, which was easily replaceable, clearly. So, like, what was the point of 421, actually, yeah.
Yeah. For a second, all your dislikes were going to be Caitlin, and I was like, oh, okay. You saved it at the very end.
My biggest issue overall is that this episode didn't necessarily feel like a penultimate episode. It was a great episode, and I loved it, don't get me wrong. But part of the problem is that the whole DeVoe storyline lacked the tension it needs, because we still don't really care about his evil plot to begin with. And I think the writers have ultimately failed in making the Thinker be more engaging as a villain, which is a shame, because I feel like that's a waste of Neil's talent. So, like, he wants to reboot people, and also erase their memories and then rule them all, like the one satellite to rule them all. Like, because he has a problem with technology, and it just could have been so much more compelling because it just sounds like he has an issue with the students and their cell phones, so it doesn't ring completely true or make for much of a suspenseful plot, you know, especially with, like, arguments about technology and ethics and all this other stuff. And I think that they could have taken something like that and really made the thinker make Barry think, but all it's been is just, like, a regular speedster-type storyline, but without the speed, so I don't know.
Whoa.
Like, last year was personal, but this year it's a bit more disconnected, so I wish they'd connected Iris' journalism and connection to the city earlier, then maybe there might have been more of a payoff. And I agree with Jess, I have the same questions about Caitlin's storyline. I was like, alright, they're doing the repressed memory stuff, but then they took it even further and brought it back to her being Killer Frost before, since childhood, and now I'm confused all over again. I think they should have just left it at the repressed memories. I think her subplot would have fit better in last week's episode or even the week before. I feel in this episode there was no time in the second to last episode for Caitlin to be going to a therapist. And yes, this is the third reboot of Killer Frost's origin story, and it really makes Caitlin look bad now all of season three, since it's been confirmed that her powers didn't stem from dark matter or Flashpoint. So, like Jess said, what is the truth? it just makes her look really bad and terrible. And I don't know, like, where the writers were trying to go with this, because now it's just, I don't know. It's just weird. And finally, while I love some Joe and Cecile, I wish they'd introduce this new power last episode, because I guess it makes sense, but I don't know, like, she was reading minds and now she can become people's minds, and it was just a little bit confusing. So I wish they had, like, if they had introduced it earlier on, then they can have brought it back in the finale rather than introducing it in the second to last episode.
Overall, I have to agree with your point that it didn't feel like a second to last episode. I thought it was a really good hour of television. I enjoyed the episode, but the stakes still don't feel real and or big. It doesn't, you know, like, the whole world is in trouble, but I don't really feel it. And it's too bad, because even if the finale is super strong, so many fans are going to feel like season four was a waste because of the lack of momentum, especially in the back half. Like, yes, there were some people complaining in the first half, but I really think, like, they set it up really well. And you can see throughout this episode, you see how meticulously they planned the season, how much, you know, every little thing factors in and is going to somehow be involved in the conclusion. But they still left way too much to be resolved in the last, like, one or two episodes, the stuff that people really care about, and instead they stuffed too much of it with one-off metas that just fucking die, which is the other issue, right? The season three, people had issues with it because it was, like, all over the place. It was, like, sloppily plotted, but the emotional investment was super strong, and no one can complain about that aspect of it. Everyone was, like, on the edge of their seats with it. Like, is Iris going to die? Is Iris not going to die? Who's going to betray? Who's going to whatever, right? Like, people really cared. But with this one, the way that they dismissed Borman's death, like, was literally one line, oh, we can't save him. That just underscores, like, the season has been nothing but failure, right? It's, like, one failure after another to the point that they don't even really care. The only one they tried to care about is Ralph. And the audience doesn't care about Ralph, so that makes it really difficult. And then the other one, the menace that we actually did like, that we met and saved, and it looked like we had some small victories in the first half of the season, all got fucking murdered in one go, and Barry barely blinked. So, anyway, it's ridiculous not to give Barry small victories that stick throughout the season. It just makes Barry seem like he's not a very good hero. Yet, like, the only victory that I have, but, you know, that we saw was that they saved the Argus people at least, mm-hmm. You know? Like, at least they didn't fucking die immediately afterward. But otherwise, it's just a wash. It just sucks. Now, I totally agree with Jessica about Danielle photobombing group scenes. That's very blatant and uncomfortable to watch. The writers don't give her lines, and yet the directors insist on drawing her face, and I don't really know why. But aside from the awkwardness of her just being Generation half the time, I didn't have an issue with the Flashpoint, you know, the Flash Time training and like whatever, like that sort of group project. But the part that was super distracting to me was when she woke up from, you know, being knocked out, and she didn't tell them about her vision, her dream, or whatever, her memory, which would have, if she had talked about it, instead of just saying, oh, no, I'm fine, right, then Barry wouldn't have gone into his whole little, oh, we can't train, blah, 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 because instead they would have been like, oh, wait, there's a way to get her powers back, cool. So that was dumb, because then she walks in on the fight just to say guys, and then not say anything else for the rest of the fight. So I was like, what was the guys? Was she going to tell them then? And if so, why was she choosing then instead of 5 minutes ago? And then why didn't she tell them 5 minutes later? And she said she just waits until the whole thing is done. And then it's like, hey, Cisco, I was definitely going to bring this up before, and then I just decided not to, so let's do it now. Okay. So like, so it was very strange to me. Fact that she remembered her traumatic kill frost memory because she got knocked out on super speed just makes me laugh. I don't know why. I was just like, what? That's what it took? And the traumatic memory was that, like, you almost got hit by a car or whatever, and then you looked icy? And then what? I don't know. It's just weird. I was like, okay.
I mean, I was just amazed that she looked in the mirror immediately after. It's like, okay. Yeah,
like, you just got hit by a car. Let me look in this mirror and see if I look okay.
Well, but maybe she wanted to see if she was bleeding or something. I don't know. Maybe it was painful. She was like, why am I in pain? Oh, because there's ice all over my body. That's why. But yes, I'm not going to try to untangle her crazy death stories. All I know that my issue with it is that they stretched out this plot that could have been in one episode over 4 episodes. Like, Iris and Caitlin realized Killer Frost was still inside her in 419. Mm-hmm. It all could have been in 419. Like, talking to Leo could have activated this memory, and then you and Iris could have looked at the DNA and be like, oh, shit, it's literally in me, you know? Done. Done. That's all. We haven't gone anywhere else.
Even if she, like, as Devo was sucking away her powers, I think it could have, like, triggered
that memory. That's what you could have had the flashback. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So that's what I thought was going to happen, but whatever. Anyway, so it's just, they're just taking too long with it. And then it's like they're trying to pad out, you know, they're like trying to pad out the season. Yeah. I mean, and on the one hand, it's good that Caitlin and Harry have like actual storylines that like mean something for their characters. But Harry's is well developed and like changes, like there's a change every episode, you know, like something happens with it. And they'd also tie it back to Devo. So they've done a good job with it. Caitlin's is literally like there was enough material there for one episode and they've made it last.
Yeah.
Way too many. So it's weird. Anyway.
The attempt was made.
Yeah. I really like the visuals of Barry taking out the Argus satellite, but immediately afterward the stand up with Devo was like so strange to me. It was super lackluster. Like Barry didn't try to grab him. Barry didn't, you know, like, I don't know, try to put him in the pipeline, whatever. It was very strange. It was just like, oh well, let's just have this conversation.
Yeah, that was really annoying. Like, let me give you this lecture. Like, let's not.
Yeah. It was, like, I liked the dialogue. I thought it was, you know, it was, like, interesting, but it was, I was just, like, waiting for, like, I was like, are you just gonna let him, you're just gonna let him walk off? And then he's like, he seemed like he was not concerned. I was like, well, maybe you should have been concerned, but he did not seem concerned, Barry. But that's fine. So there you go. Those are my issues. What do we predict? What are our predictive feelings?
Okay, so since Iris did mention that it was the first home she'd lived in with Barry, I thought that was significant and makes me believe even more that they'll be moving by the end of the finale. I don't know how they're going to try to cram it in there, but it's still possible.
It's what we deserve.
Yes, only because, like, we know behind the scenes they were shooting at a house. Iris is wearing a different sweater than she is in the yellow shirt, so something's going on there. Also, stars were mentioned twice this episode, and the reminder that Joe's house is indeed not the one that's bitchin' means the stars falling are shining, and that house's bitchin' lines are ready to be said in the finale, and most likely Barry will say the stars line while inside the mindscape.
That is yes, I definitely agree that stars and house's bitching are confirmed for the finale, just because they were both brought up in episode 22. Yeah. So, it's totally happening in episode 23. I also think that Cecile's brand new power is going to be used to inhabit Doa's mind somehow, or, like, even if it's not used, like, they tell her to do it, like, it's going to happen, you know? Like, oh, whoops, this is happening now. But they may use it to, like, open, you know, like, to make it easier for Barry. I don't know. We'll see. But what I need to happen, that better fucking happen, so I'm going to predict it, is that Barry is going to need help going, leaving DeVoe's mind, right, after he defeats him. So after Barry defeats DeVoe in the mindscape, presumably, I don't know if DeVoe's going to be dying or what's going to happen to him, but Barry will need to get out of there before he also goes crazy or, you know, it becomes enlightened or dies. And Iris will have to pull him out. If that doesn't happen, I'll be so upset.
Oh, so, you know what? That reminds me, like, yes, I love that because I need that to happen. And it could be that he has trouble getting out because, like, if they're going to do an Inception type thing, like, DeVoe's mind is collapsing.
Yes, so, exactly. So he has to get out of there. Yes. Thank you. And it would be a perfect parallel to 401 because Iris was needed, even though other people were there to get Barry in and do whatever, you know, Iris was needed to finally bring Barry back to himself. Mm-hmm. This episode was also written by Eric and Todd, so they better come through for me.
Parallels.
Exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And because the episode is titled We Are the Flash, mm-hmm. I feel like they're going to put that back. And it's going to be a Barry and Iris thing. Like, she's going to be the one to help pull them out because they are the Flash kind of thing. Yes. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully that pans out. I think Cecile's new ability, I agree with you, Tatiana, that her ability is going to be used in the finale and connected to DeVoe. But I think instead of, like, helping them open up DeVoe's mind or whatever, I think that she's going to be more as a warning beacon that DeVoe is near, because I think in the promo we saw that he comes back to Star Labs at some point. So I think that Cecile will inhabit DeVoe's mind, and that's how Team Flash will know that he is in the building or in the vicinity.
Okay.
That'll be interesting, because I feel like they wouldn't use a 9-month pregnant lady about to give birth, you know, to open up a mind. The best idea. But everyone else. Oh, okay. So this is one thing that I've been seeing a lot, that a lot of people have been seeing, like, purple in the Mindscape Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking that maybe Nora shows up there. But I doubt that we'll see her before the final moments of the episode. She hasn't really been as present in the DeVoe plot as thought that she was going to be earlier on, so I don't really see her showing up at the end. I think the unexpected allies, just Marlies, helping them with the chair to get into the mindscape. And I don't think we see Nora until, like, the final moments of the episode to confirm whose house is Vision. And
yeah. So
stop hiding from her mother. Purposely made it a point to have Nora avoid Iris all season. And I think it's specifically so that they can reveal her to Iris in the finale.
Yes.
Don't know, like, the why of it all. We won't know that until season 5. That's what Candace has confirmed, that they won't get into that part. But I do think they will reveal her to Iris and Barry in the finale.
Yes.
I mentioned my crackhead Caitlin theories. So I think the new Killer Frost origin is going to have to connect back to her parents and her father's death in a way. And, like, on the most, like, crackheadedness of the crackhead scale of, like, how high are you when you wrote this? I feel like, you know, Caitlin had a twin who died early on, or was, like, really sick, and her parents tried to save them by, like, conjoining her with Caitlin, her sister, which is why Caitlin and Killer Frost are two distinct separate personalities or identities. That would be, like, one way to kind of, you know,
that would be quite crackhead.
Yes, that's the ultimate crackhead on the crackhead scale. Sliding down the crackhead scale, so the more realistic side, but probably no less disturbing territory, is that her parents probably experimented on her either to try to find a cure for her dad's ALS, like, maybe they thought that she could be, like, a bone marrow match for him and wanted to grow, like, enhanced stem cells in her to kind of do, like, a transplant with him later on and kind of cure his ALS, or they wanted to make sure, especially, like, her dad wanted to make sure that she did inherit the ALS condition and tried to, like, experiment on her and do something. And then, of course, the whole sci-fi of it all, something went wrong, and then she developed this ability, Killer Frost's ability, that they tried to, like, hide from her to protect her. And this actually falls more in line with what some of her fans actually want to see, so, like, on the crackhead scale.
I want to know what it means, like, with Nora's expression at the end of that one episode when she met Caitlin and Harry. Like, yeah. How that fits in.
Yeah. It's still, like, it still is, if it is that the second explanation that her parents were just trying to find a cure for ALS for either her dad or for Caitlin, it doesn't make sense with the whole separate conscious identity thing. Either Caitlin is responsible for all the things that she did, or, you know, that whole crackhead, she has a twin that got spliced into her DNA instead of, like, letting it die, and, like, that's a whole other person that's just bitter because they don't have a real life because they've been spliced into their sister kind of thing. So it's either, like, really, really out there, or it's not, but it still doesn't make sense with her separate consciousness. So one of those things has to change.
Right, right.
I will only argue that a lot of the decisions that were made were still not as Killer Frost. So I don't know how they're going to, would ever try to do the response.
They're not.
Yeah, they're not. They're not going to do it.
They already did. Now that we've predicted the hell out of Flash, it's time to recap Arrow. Life Sentence, the canceled Arrow episode and not the canceled CW show, commences with a joint commences with the joint task force of the FBI and Team Arrow trying to hunt down Diaz. They come up with jack shit because Diaz is somehow smarter than everyone, even though he's their stupidest villain yet. Turns out he's working with some comic book canon peeps called the Longbow Hunters. Gotta love shoutouts that mean nothing in the context of the show. After that goes sideways, Samantha Watson nonetheless informs all our main characters that they have immunity, and Oliver begins the apology tour of 2018. First, he gives Diggle an Arrow suit, and Diggle responds, "Thanks, but after brooding about not being Green Arrow all season long, I've decided off-screen that I don't need to be anyway." So, Anatoly tries to help Team Arrow by leaking Diaz's location, bless his heart, and ends up accidentally leading them into a trap. Thankfully, Renee does not die here, despite his incredibly foreboding last call to Zoe. This leads to the rest of Oliver's apology tour, in which he tells Renee he's a good man and a good dad, and then he and Dinah exchange I'm sorry's and I respect you's as well. Quentin and Oliver nearly make me cry with their moments, where we basically confirm that Quentin is a dad to Oliver as well. And Dad wants to save Laurel no matter what, in exchange for which Diaz demands that he get rid of the FBI. Instead, Quentin hints that Oliver should track him via pacemaker before setting off to try to rescue his daughter's doppelganger on his own. This rescue attempt ends with Quentin taking a bullet meant for Laurel and Dinah coming to get both of them out of there. Quentin goes to the hospital, and it's basically a repeat of Laurel's death, where they try to make you think the character will pull through, and then they just fucking die. Sarah even shows up and doesn't get to say goodbye to her dad because Oliver did it for her. But at least she meets the other Laurel. Speaking of which, other Laurel screams Diaz into the river against Oliver's wishes, so his body doesn't turn up when the FBI searches it. Who's excited to spend another season with that useless pile of crap? Raise your hand. And now that the deal is done, Samantha comes to collect Oliver, which is how everyone, including Felicity, finds out that he's going to jail. Because even when Felicity confronted him earlier in the episode, he only told her he was giving up being the Green Arrow. Because he knows how marriage works. Felicity then visits Oliver with a plan to get him out of prison, but he tearfully reminds her that he must pay for his crimes of saving the city multiple times and somehow letting the team fall apart. I don't know. Anyway, she has to remember to feed and clothe William daily. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Little bit of food every day, take him on a walk.
The season ends with Oliver giving a press conference and saying, "I am Green Arrow," before suiting up in his new orange uniform. And that's what you missed on Arrow. So, what did you guys like about this episode? Share with the class.
Okay. There are some things I did like about the episode. I did enjoy Oliver's conversations with everyone. The apology tour, as you called it, and this time I did feel like it was more genuine, probably because he knew he was going to jail. So he's like, I must say goodbye to all of you peasants while I go hang out in prison for 6 months. His conversation with Renee and Dinah specifically were really good because I think she got teary, so I was not expecting that. And I was impressed because I'm like, oh, I didn't know, you know, you guys were that close. But it just felt like it was better than what we've gotten before. And I'll admit, I got really sad when he was talking to Quentin and saying he learned how to be a good dad from him. They've come so far. And it was really a heartstrings tugging moment. I do think Emily Bette Ricard really gave her all in that final scene with Oliver. She was devastated and desperate and confused as to why he didn't want to fight back or try to get out of jail. Her line about William wondering why he'll be taken care of by a woman he's only known for a year just really hit home. And you could see, like, the fear that she had of having to be a parent to him and not wanting to do it alone, because she and Oliver were supposed to be a team. But it was really well done on her end. I really like that Anatoly knew Diaz was onto him and turned himself in. So I'm glad he didn't die. And even though Quentin did die, he at least got to be all heroic and take a bullet for Laurel, which is what, you know, we've known he was going to do all along, because that's Quentin was fighting for her and all that. And finally, Renee's call to his daughter ended me. I thought, oh my God, they're going to kill him. They're going to kill him. And like, why would you do this to me? Because Renee, I think of the three new members, I think he was the one that could have died, but I'm really glad that they didn't. So it was a super emotional moment, and Rick Gonzalez really knocked it out of the park, and I was gutted, and I didn't recover until two commercials later.
Yeah, I agree. I loved his call to Zoe. I thought it was, like, really emotional and really stand out, and I will agree with Tatiana in the future that acting-wise, like, all the mains had really great character beats and opportunities to shine throughout the episode. So, like, with Renee and his daughter, with Dinah and her conversation with Oliver, and, you know, Diggle, Felicity, and Oliver, like, I really thought he had a lot of great moments on his, like, apology tour with everyone, except his wife. Which we'll get into later. But he gave, like, oh, also, I was going to mention, like, Tasha's likes. One of the things that she liked, she also appreciated Oliver's strong, or Steven's acting, rather, in his interactions with the different members of the team, felt sincere. But one thing that she said that she actually enjoyed was that Curtis wasn't a stop on the Oliver apology tour, because didn't feel like it was warranted. And I, like, when I read that, I was like, yeah, you know what, you're right. Because I felt like Curtis was very minimal in this episode. But, like, it's right that he had, like, the least issues with Oliver. So he didn't, like, right. Get, like, apology kind of thing. And so, you know, I was fine not having him on the apology tour. So that was fine. But I thought that his moment with Diggle, Oliver's moment with Diggle, was really sweet. And when he gave him his own suit, he was like, oh, he's going to share his toys. But then I realized it was because he's going to go to jail. So, you know, I was like, well.
you can be Green Arrow now, because I won't be.
Right. Exactly. It was nice in the moment, but it's just kind of like, oh, well, womp, womp. But my favorite goodbyes was probably his ones with Quentin, because they really went through a lot of shit over 6 years. And you can see, like, all of the growth in their relationship together. And speaking of Quentin, I really loved his, like, pacemaker comments and that conversation that he had with Oliver, because he knew that, you know, he was going to go off script and make sure that his new Laurel was going to be okay. And so him, like, leaving that breadcrumb for Oliver to pick up on, and Oliver actually picking up on it and, like, running with it, I thought was really well done. And a smart idea from him. And I think for him, for Quentin, saving this Laurel was to make up for not being able to save his Laurel. The fact that he worked with Damien Dark, and Damien Dark killed his daughter. So this was kind of like his redemption moment to save someone that looked like Laurel. And then just their relationship in general was another relationship that really went through it in a short amount of time. So I like that he kind of ended that story with her. I also think that both canaries, that both Laurel and Dinah put aside their differences, and both of them, like, were helping Quentin to escape, helping him walk out after he got shot, and Dinah, like, beating up all the guards so that Laurel could get Quentin out. I thought it was good continuity that someone at least called Sarah to tell her she had been shot and remember that she was a member of the Arrowverse. It was like the only thing that I liked about Sarah showing up. So I'll get the other part of it in my dislikes.
I've got to agree that I thought that Dinah rescuing Laurel and Quentin was a nice, not callback, but like a pin on that story. You know, like it's like they've come not full circle either, but you know the words I'm saying. That basically they've come to terms with each other, and they're not trying to kill each other anymore. So yay! But anyway, yes, like you said, I feel like a lot of the actors really stepped it up for this final episode, or finale episode, and it was great to see a higher caliber than we're used to on this show. Rick Gonzalez really needs a shout out for that phone call to Zoe. It was perfect. It was heartbreaking. It's definitely one of the best scenes of the episode. And Juliana had me thinking Diane was going to bite the bullet, because I was like, why is this so emotional? Like, oh my God. I was definitely waiting. Like, I was like, someone other than, it's going to be not just Quentin, it's going to be someone else too. So she really sold that scene. Had me scared. Katie did a great job in all she did with Paul. And of course, Paul did a great job in all his scenes. But, I liked the meeting between Laurel and Sarah a lot, in terms of just, like, how, like, cautious they were, and, like, how it's, like, you could see that Laurel wanted to, like, reach out, but also was, like, putting up a wall, kind of, so it was interesting. I liked it. I liked it a lot. Stephen and Emily both did a good job in that final jail scene. There was a lot of things that we can, you know, talk about writing-wise, directing-wise, but Oliver's tears felt real for once, and I didn't cringe at anyone's line deliveries. That is very rare. So I really believed the emotions from both of them in that scene. It was definitely some of their best work. Narratively speaking, finding things to like will be hard, because I hated this episode. Surprise! But I can say that Oliver's apologies felt earned. IMO. Like, it didn't make the infighting storylines worth them at all, but it did make me feel like both parties recognized their responsibility in each scenario. So in every case, so that was good. Of course, my favorite was the Oliver and Quentin goodbye, even though, you know, I wish that he had given one of those big scenes to either Sarah or Laurel. But at least Lance went out protecting Laurel so that she'll know she was worth it to him. You know, if he had to go, that was the way to do it. Anatoly would be another scene that I liked. I thought he was really funny. And I hope that we get some more of him. He didn't die, right? I didn't like
him. No, he's still alive.
Because I just remember, okay, because Diaz was like, you're going to die slowly, and everyone else is going to die fast or whatever. And I was like, oh, protect Anatoly. I thought he was a lot of fun. And that's, yeah, those are my likes. What did we not like?
So, to say that the finale was underwhelming is a major understatement. It was too long. It wasn't satisfying at all. Diaz is still alive, and I'm pretty pissed about that. I watched the ending. Like, I was astonished because Oliver completely disrespected his wife by not telling her about his plan with Amanda, that he would not only go to jail, but tell everyone that he was the Green Arrow, which is something that affected both her and William. It was a complete disregard for her feelings, and it made it look like, one, he didn't trust her enough to tell her, and two, that he married her for the sake of ensuring someone would be around to take care of William while he's off making his own life choices. He's repeated that constantly in 6B, and after last week's episode, where Felicity told him that being married meant they were a team and that they had to make decisions together, you'd think he'd have learned his lesson and taken that to heart and discussed it with her before going to speak with Samantha. Like, I think some people had that theory, and we discussed it. But he proved once again that he didn't take any of that to heart, and not viewing her as an equal has truly become an issue for me. The way that the whole scene was shot could have been better. Oliver doesn't maintain eye contact the way he did with everybody else throughout the episode. He's distant. He doesn't stand to meet her or even reassure her that it'll be okay and they'll figure it out. He's resigned to his fate, and I know that's supposed to look all heroic and whatever, but he's leaving her behind without bothering to bring hope or any final words like an I love you or a kiss or whatever. He's leaving her with nothing except trauma.
And a child that's not hers.
So it was truly bizarre to me, and he couldn't be bothered to pull her aside at any point to let her know what was going on when he had the opportunity to do that with everyone. So she had to come after him to say, hey, what's going on with your farewell tour, you know? He didn't go to her like he pulled everybody else aside. So I thought that was pretty shitty. And other things besides that that I disliked was the fact that they killed Quentin off screen. I think he didn't deserve that. And after realizing that Paul Blackthorne didn't even ask to leave, makes it even worse. Sarah shows up and doesn't do much. So she can exchange an awkward scene with Laurel and not even get a chance to say goodbye to her dad. So, like, what was the point? And Quentin's run on Arrow has largely been defined by his love for his daughters. And to not have Sarah get a chance to speak with him really made me mad. So, whatever. Finally, I hate Diaz, and I'm so annoyed that they kept his ass alive instead of just killing him off. Like, he's the one villain I wanted to truly kick the bucket, and they keep him around. Like, why would you do that? Everyone hates him. Everyone can agree in the Arrow fandom and anyone who watches the show that he is the worst Arrow villain. Why are you keeping him around to torture us? Like, he acted like a whiny asshole the entire time. He's desperate to regain his power over the city, and he was reckless and completely unhinged, and he was so stupid. And I do not want to see him on my screen in season 7. I give up.
We at Ladies of Gumption hate Ricardo Diaz.
So much. But
I totally agree that it's just like, and Tasha agreed as well, it's just, it doesn't really make any sense, like, why anyone would be scared of him, why, like, how is he smarter than King James, like, none of this stuff kind of makes sense, but yet, here we are, and I guess, you know, we talked last week about how are they going to have, because we do feel like the Quadrant is going to come into play next season, because it was introduced so late in this season, but with, like, the Quadrant is like, you know, we are trying to figure out how it's going to be like a big thing next season when 3/4 of the Quadrant are practically dead because Diaz killed them. And now we know that it's going to be a thing because Diaz is still fucking alive. And you're like, well, why? What did we do to deserve this? But like other dislikes for me, like, and I feel really weird about this, but I didn't like Samantha. I didn't really like her in this episode. Specifically, what I didn't like is that she was really willing to throw away Laurel as collateral damage to get to Diaz. It's like, I'm pretty sure even as an FBI agent, there's a moral obligation to pursue a situation in which no hostages die. And basically what Laurel was. Laurel wasn't, like, on Diaz's side at that point. She wasn't, like, a hostile, you know, person. She was, like, an actual hostage in the hostage situation. Like, why would you be okay with her dying, or, you know, so flippant about, like, whether she lived or dies, and you don't care. So, like, her, like, Anna being so lackadaisical about Laurel's life, plus her consistent insistence that Oliver was still going to jail. Like, every time, like, something happened, she was like, this doesn't change our agreement. I was like, no shit, Shamanda. Like, just, like, stop bringing it up. Going to jail, okay? It was just kind of got, like, a little bit annoying after a while. Like, you don't need to remind us, like, every 5 minutes that he's going to jail. Like, we get it. And then they really paid Katie Lotz money to stand around and look shocked at Oliver getting arrested. Because it's basically the only thing she did. Like, her with E2, I'm going to call her Yanny. I feel like, aside, that officially, like, Yanny should be, like, an official, like, nickname for a Laurel. She's called her Yanny.
There you go.
Sister's doppelganger was super underwhelming. Sarah's been, like, guilting herself for over, like, a year at not being able to bring her sister back. It's been a pretty heavily recurring theme into her characterization on Legends of Tomorrow. And now she meets Yanny and has, like, no reaction whatsoever. Like, how, Sway? Like, how? So, I mean, like, I Tatiana. Like, I felt like even if she got briefed beforehand that this girl is from E2, I would expect at least to, like, you know, you look so much like her. And the same with, like, Laurel. Like, did she not have a sister on Earth 2 named Sarah? Right. Like, was it not weird for her? Could they not have had this conversation and meet and greet, but standing over their father with Quentin, like, telling him that he loved them both? Like, could that not have happened?
Right.
Because neither Laurel...
would have been nice.
Yeah, like, neither Laurel nor Sarah, especially Sarah, because, like, that's her bio dad, got to say goodbye to Quentin. So, like, you know, it was just really weird. Like, are you... fucking kidding me? Like, this man is gonna die, and either his daughters, like his real daughter and his like doppelganger daughter, adopted daughter, get to see him or like tell him goodbye. Like, that doesn't really make sense. Other news: Diaz survived. He's like a cockroach at the end of the apocalypse, and it's just, you know, we keep saying it over and over again, but like Prometheus, like why couldn't Prometheus be this Diaz storyline? Like, why do we get fucking Diaz instead of, like, Prometheus, who could live and, like, be the quadrant next season? Like, I'm just, you know, not enthused about Diaz still being dead. And then, like, the Elicity goodbye. And I suppose there are things that could be liked about it as well, like you guys said about the acting, but it's overall super frustrating. We debated last week about whether he had consulted Felicity, and I feel like that should have been a thing, seeing how the last couple episodes have been about them being a team and doing things together. But then it turned out that he didn't in the finale. And so he's, like, chosen to fall on his sword by himself. And I feel like that's the opposite of what he was supposed to be learning this whole season. Because, like, let me...
Yes! Yes, that's exactly right.
Like, he's, like, pushing away people all season and, like, not trusting people. And they get mad at him. So at the finale, he was like, well, let me just remove myself from the situation. I'm like, no, it's not the lesson you're supposed to learn.
That's not what they want.
Yeah, that's what they want, Oliver. And I feel like his plan to turn himself in should have been discussed by at least, like, tell the team that's what he was planning on doing up front. And if not the team, especially Felicity, before he did it. Because even if they didn't like it, at least it would be him involving them in decisions rather than pushing them away for their own good. And I feel like he did Felicity a disservice, especially after they had just established that whole dynamic and her, like, pushing back against him. I thought it was still, like, him not listening to her. And then as far as, like, the directing and the acting choices, of course, like, Maya already said that he didn't, like, stand up. He didn't really look at her. And then, like, Tasha even mentioned this in her email about what she didn't like about it. Because I think Bamford is their choreography guy. He's the one that directed this episode. And she was saying for this Elicity goodbye scene that they holding hands, which is something that Emily do as, like, an Elicity thing, part of their character building for their characters as a couple, is that they habitually hold hands during scenes. And any other director probably would have pulled back enough to capture that and would have focused on maybe even, like, the rings that gravitates moment that they're going to be, like, separated for the next at least 6 months over the hiatus to show that they're not just friends or partners or teammates, but actually spouses being separated. It's like he's going to Supermax, but they don't for life. And they don't hug, they don't kiss, they don't say, I love you. Like, that's not really, like, what is that? What are you giving to your... for our fans to leave with, and it's like nothing. And I feel like, yeah, you know, I guess
going on, maybe photo shoot.
Yeah, like what Tasha, going off what Tasha was saying, that if I feel like with maybe because he's a stunt guy, mm-hmm, that doesn't go boom or pow, that he doesn't really care about it. It's maybe that's why it wasn't as, you know, intimate as it should have been. But it was just really lacking in that moment for what was really going to be, you know, he doesn't know that he's going to get out. He's, like, preparing himself to stay in prison forever. So it doesn't really make sense that he doesn't at least, like, hug her or kiss her or tell her that he loves her. Like, it didn't really make sense.
It's like he's going off to summer camp. Right. So, are those all your dislikes, my dear?
Those are all of my dislikes.
They're so short. It's like you loved the episode. No, I'm joking. First things first, I really hope that Beth totally totally revamps Arrow, because, wow, this episode was a hot-ass mess, and this whole season was a hot-ass mess. Leaving Diaz alive, ready for a comeback next season, when he's universally the most hated villain on Arrow ever, is just, like, the worst possible move. I have no idea why anyone would do that, other than because Mark Guggenheim was stepping down, slash being fired, slash being, quote-unquote, promoted. And so he decided to just, like Tasha said, just burn it all down, you know? Or leave them in a position that was just, like, they had to deal with the consequences of his choices. They would not be able to erase this horrible season from existence based on how season 7 started.
So,
yeah, exactly. Oliver blatantly lying to his wife and then talking to her like she's Reza rather than his wife is totally obnoxious. Like, why were half of Felicity's conversations in the back half of the season just him reminding her what kind of parent she needs to be, when they should be about her reminding him what kind of parent he needs to be? Or what kind of husband he needs to be? Because I guess he's a better parent right now than he is a husband, I guess. Either way, it's ridiculous. Also, in one of those post-mortem interviews, we learned that Paul was written out. He didn't choose to go. So I'm very disappointed that they just gave him this sloppy exit. Like, with, he doesn't get a real goodbye with either one of his daughters. Like, he gets a better one with Laurel than he does with Sarah. But either way, like, if you were the one that chose this, you'd think you would have given him some more closure to his storyline. It wasn't like you had to write him out because he wanted to. No one gets a chance to grieve his death. By the time that we see it 6 months later, they're not going to be grieving his death in the same way. You know, he didn't get a funeral, he didn't shit. We didn't see the death in the first place. So, I don't know, because we had to be told 300 times that Oliver was going to jail when we already knew, I guess. Because that's what we saw instead. Speaking of Oliver going to jail, I really hate that Oliver gave up his freedom for nothing, right? Because Diaz is still in the wind, like, I don't know why Samantha would take him to jail until Diaz is apprehended. Like, isn't that the deal? You help us capture Diaz, and then everyone gets immunity, and you go to jail? But instead, it's like, you helped us, and then you promptly did not help us, and now we don't have Diaz. Okay, go to jail. This was fun. Like, I mean, I don't know, whatever. That was stupid. And I also don't know how she plans to catch Diaz. Like, clearly they can't catch him. You did need Oliver and the team, and now you don't have Oliver because you put him in jail. I don't imagine that the team's going to be that happy to work with you because you just put him in jail. So, I don't know. It's just, it seems like everyone's super calm with the fact that Diaz is just kind of prancing around, probably about to kill a bunch more people and still take over the city. So, whatever. Finally, the only good thing about the finale, which I should have said in the likes, but I didn't, was the choreography. Fight choreography. Did a good job. Everything else, well, two performances were good. Everything else is garbage. Okay, what do we predict for season 7? What will Beth do?
Oliver won't be out of jail so soon, I don't think. I'd give them four episodes, maybe until 7. So I had a friend who said that they had, like, a Supermax Arrow storyline in the comics, so he thinks they're going to mine that. But he's going to get out before the crossover, obvious, but I don't know that he's gonna get out so soon because Barry spent 3 episodes in jail, so
yeah, I think it'll be like a thing for him, a little arc for him in jail.
Mm-hmm. Want Felicity to have a problem with him not telling her about all this. I don't want it to be, you know, swept under the rug, right?
One thing I think was interesting was that Samantha was saying that, she's not leaving Star City until she has Diaz. So, and they don't have Diaz at the end of season 7, which means she should potentially be either recurring or a regular next season.
So fingers crossed.
More of her storyline next season.
I feel like I was going to predict something, and then I probably forgot it. But I agree that Supermax at most will be 7 episodes. But I think they could manage to stretch it out. It'd be interesting if they did it. Like, they did commit to Diggle being the Green Arrow for quite a while this season. So it's possible that they would commit again. Diggle would be the Green Arrow and Oliver would be in jail. It'd be really interesting. We'll see. Aside from that, I think that Beth is going to probably... probably write a better show than Mark did. So not excited is too strong a word, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
All right. Are we ready to nominate a lady with gumption of side B?
I guess.
It's gonna be a tough call to find one. I'm not sure that I would have anyone in Arrow.
No.
Maybe Laurel for screaming at Diaz or like. I don't know.
Does it work? Does it like? She screamed at him.
I guess. And then didn't... But yeah, the only other I guess from Flash would be Iris for convincing Marlies with her own words. But you know, she spent a lot of time with Harry having to convince her to do that. Mm-hmm. That was the right thing to do, to live in Marlies' shoes. But I think that on the Flash side, that she probably, because Caitlin did, like I said, like Caitlin was mainly like photobombing other people's conversations.
Yeah.
She made a good breakthrough, but I don't know that it was like, you know, gumption
filled.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it just happened to her.
Yeah.
Right.
She didn't do anything about it. Right. She just went in with Cisco and then was like, all right, well, now I know. Yeah. That's exciting. I would probably pick Iris for side B for sure. And then probably, I feel like, Lyda can defeat Iris. Because Iris has won enough.
Lyda's was stronger this week.
Lyda.
I had won enough ladies and gumptions already. I feel like Lyda was stronger week than she did.
I agree.
Alright, Lyda wins.
I like it.
Side B.
Woo! 25, is it? We're on?
I think 26.
I think it's week 25.
Is it?
We'll have to check it out. Fight to the death.
I have to check Aaron's little...
Yeah.
Yes, Aaron will tell us.
All right. This concludes Side B. Thank you for joining us. And let us know if this works for you, splitting up episodes.
Yeah, or if you're like, I didn't listen to one of the fives. Because will be very sad. It'll hurt our feelings.
Yes, because we still do all the new stuff in Side A. So, you know, love us and listen to both. All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.